Welcome to The Endless Barrel. This is a podcast dedicated to unraveling the intricate threads of mental health, exploring the profound depths of the human mind, and shedding light on the often turbulent journey towards well-being. In each episode, we embark on a thoughtful exploration of the challenges, triumphs, and evolving narratives surrounding mental health. Join me as we navigate the labyrinth of emotions, share personal stories, and engage in insightful conversations with experts, advocates, and individuals who have weathered their own storms. In this episode, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by registered dietitian Joe Moscalu. Joe's main focus is on eating disorders, and in particular, binge eating disorder. She offers up some very helpful advice on managing your binge eating, supporting a loved one, explains exactly what binge eating disorder is, and gives advice on what to look for if you're concerned about your binge eating disorder or a loved one. I hope you enjoy the episode. So hello, Joe. We're welcoming back a past guest of the Endless Barrel podcast today. I don't know if you guys remember, but Joe was on the podcast with me. We were just chatting beforehand about 2 years ago. And Joe is, of course, an expert in binge eating disorder, and she's a registered dietitian. So we're going to have a good conversation about that today. So, Joe, how are you? Thanks very much for coming back on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's great to be here. And as we were just saying, it feels like no time at all since I was last on the podcast. Can't believe it's almost 2 years ago now.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I posted a clip of the first episode we did on Instagram today, and you messaged me saying it feels like a lifetime ago. And it was only kind of when I read that and I was kind of sat back and thought to myself, and I was like, it actually feels like a lifetime ago. We were just chatting beforehand and we've kind of both gone through so much or been through a lot, you know, since then, and it genuinely does feel like a lifetime ago. But yeah, look, you're still happy and healthy, so am I, and I hope everything is okay. And obviously you've moved as well and loads going on, so how are you in general anyway? Everything all good?
Yeah, everything's good. I suppose probably the biggest change since we last spoke in February 2022 is actually, there's been a few big changes, my gosh. I have two young children now. So when we first spoke, I would have just had my first baby. She would have been like a couple of months old. Now she's 2.5, and I have a 7-month-old as well. Two little girls, which I didn't realize the impact that having two little girls would have on me in terms of being an eating disorder practitioner.
Okay.
I think my outlook on like eating disorders has shifted somewhat now to like a have to protect them from developing the same disordered eating disorders that I've experienced and that like you have experienced. You know, it's about now protecting the next generation. So that's been pretty pivotal in the last 2 years. I've also started doing a doctorate in binge eating, which has been just, if anybody listening is doing or has done a doctorate, it's one of the most vulnerable experiences that I've been through. It really does open you up and forces you to address things that you've never thought about before. There's no hiding behind anything when you're doing a doctorate. You have to look at your practice. You have to look at why you're doing things, why you're saying the things that you are, why you're spreading these messages, where they're coming from, really get into the bones of it. So in the last 2 years, that's what I've been up to. It's been a journey. Wow. And it continues.
Wow. Jesus, that's, yeah, I didn't realize that you were doing that as well. Mm. That's absolutely mad. Mm. You just mentioned, you know, like you have two young girls, and I've got two small girls as well. Mine are 8 and 10. Do you find, obviously, from what you do, does it kind of change, or maybe not change is the wrong word, but the kind of impact how you parent them, like you said a minute ago, like you obviously protecting them as well. So I'm more obviously conscious of what I say and what I don't say, and especially when it comes to like food and stuff like that. Obviously they have no issues at all, but even if somebody's around and I feel quite protective over, and maybe it's just triggering for me. I don't want people mentioning food or commenting on them or anything. Like, do you find yourself like that, or are you kind of taking a different look on, you know, on it?
No, I'm right there with you. Like, okay. Totally taking that protective role and wanting to safeguard that environment as much as possible so that they're not exposed to those comments about like their bodies. And okay, they're only 2.5 and 7 months, but even for a 2.5-year-old, you'd be surprised Comments about like how her body is, how she's looking, what she's eating, how much she's eating. And it's really startling, like probably from doing my doctorate, I'm very immersed in research around binge eating right now. And those early years from age two is when children start to pick up those messages about their bodies and how what they're eating can impact their bodies, and that they have the power, well, the quote unquote power to change your body. We know that, that's not exactly how it is, but that's how it's portrayed to us, that we have the power to do that. And those messages are internalized from about age two. So yeah, I feel very protective. I feel like very, very proud of them as well, because they don't have any, oh gosh, they're so young, of course they don't, but they don't, they are showing no signs of internalizing any of that information so far. So I feel proud of them in that sense.
Oh, that's amazing. I had someone contact me the other day, who has a daughter. She's 13, and she's quite worried about her daughter. So, like, maybe we talk about, kids and that, because obviously kids can be quite, they can be like sponges, and they can pick up stuff, and they can, and they're very, they're very kind of, their minds can be affected by so many things. They've enough going on. Like, what would you say, or what advice would you give to a parent who might be starting to, and this doesn't have to just be binge eating disorder, I suppose. This can be, maybe, kind of restricting food as well. I mean, maybe what, because they, this is the question they asked me, like, what should they be looking for? And I'm like, well, look, I'm not the expert. And I knew I was going to be speaking to you today. And I said, all right, I'll ask you the question. What things would you maybe kind of tell a parent that they should be looking out for?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I'm glad that they asked you. They aren't just struggling with that alone. So well done to that person for seeking help. Every situation is so different. So I think at the core of my advice, it would be to notice any change, whether that's the teen is like eating a lot more than usual or a lot less than usual, or they're leaving the dinner table right away and rushing off somewhere where they haven't nor done that before. Have meal times become a sudden struggle where it's difficult to have a pleasant family meal time, whereas before that was no problem? It's noticing any change. What's different? Is their behavior different? Is their attitudes different? Are they more emotional around food? Are they talking about food more? I think that change is going to be quite telling about what could be going on.
Is it the, well, obviously you can't answer this, it's different for everyone, but would you think it's probably more common in girls than boys at that age? I mean, because obviously, like, as we know, like, we were talking about, like, I lived with body dysmorphia for a long time, and there's a, obviously, there's a thing called muscle dysmorphia. So a lot of young boys are like, they want to go to the gym, and they're, they want to bulk up and all that type of stuff. But then obviously girls might be thinking slightly differently. Would there be a difference between kind of behaviors in the boys and the girls at that age, or would they probably be quite similar?
Yeah, I think I'm not exactly sure about how it might look in terms of like the behaviors being different. Of course, eating disorders, as per the research, do affect girls more than boys. Again, as per the research, but we know that eating disorders are largely undetected. So, absolutely, young boys will be struggling with these behaviors too. But maybe they are being illustrated in different ways, like if it is a thing of like bigorexia or musclerexia, where they're all of a sudden interested in working out, going to the gym, they're asking about protein supplements. Again, it's noticing how that their attitudes, their behaviors are changing, and that can be really telling. But certainly, we shouldn't just ignore boys that they don't experience eating disorders. They absolutely do, and probably more so now than they ever have been.
We just got a little sidetrack for the kids there, so maybe we'll just go back a little bit, and let's just explain to people what exactly binge eating disorder actually is, just in case people aren't too sure of it.
So yeah, binge eating disorder is an official eating disorder. It has been since at least 2013. It was also talked about long before that, but it got its official diagnosis in 2013. And it's really described as eating in one sitting a larger portion of food than most people would eat in that period of time. Sorry, that most people would eat in a short period of time. Feeling quite out of control while eating, like some people describe it as being an outer body experience, like that they're in a trance and that their hands are just reaching out and grabbing that food and putting it into their mouth without them having any kind of control over that. And feeling very guilty, very ashamed, very remorseful afterwards. So they're all the hallmark criteria of binge eating disorder. There's also a couple of extra things to like officially meet the standards, you know, for having binge eating disorder. But if I'm being honest with you, most people don't ever get a diagnosis of binge eating disorder. Most people will relate to some of what I just said, but maybe not everything to officially get the diagnosis of BED. And that doesn't mean that your disorder is any less important or less deserving of help and support. Most people don't get a diagnosis of BED because we're not made to fit into these diagnostic boxes, these diagnostic criteria. And you know what? They're not perfect. What I just mentioned to you there, those are the criteria for BED as per like the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Health Conditions, DSM-5. There's also a whole other set of criteria from the ICD-11 and the International Classification of Diseases, which came out more recently. So what I said is like a ballpark. If it resonates with you, it could be indicative of you having a binge eating disorder or just a binge eating problem, and you don't need to go any further than that. A problem is a problem. You don't need to have the official diagnosis to be worthy of care and attention for it.
Yeah, because when we first spoke, like we said earlier on, it was about 2 years ago. I had been, my diagnosis for body dysmorphia had happened, but it was really talking to you. Well, actually, I think I was thought might have been talking to Sinead. I might have been Niamh Rubinsky. I'm talking about Sinead from Intuitive Eating, and I think they might have mentioned you. And then I looked at you, and it's binge eating disorder. And I think it was nearly certain it was your page or it was you that kind of put me onto the binge eating disorder, because I was really unfamiliar with even the term. I mean, obviously I knew I had a problem with it, but I didn't know there was an actual term, just like the body dysmorphia. And again, it was like when a light bulb went off over my head, and I was like, okay, so like if there is a condition for this, then I can kind of go backwards and I can kind of deal with it better then. But again, it's still something that just doesn't go away. Well, it hasn't for me anyway. So I'll just give you an example. So even last week, I went out for dinner with someone, and I thought it was fine. And I got there, and well, I thought we were going out for some wine. It was like a wine bar that was filled, and I thought we were just going out for wine. And I got there, and all of a sudden, I was like told, well, we're going to be having food as well. And something just triggered him. He was like, okay, I wasn't really prepared for that. I wasn't in the right headspace. I had an injured back, so I was a bit stressed with that and a bit emotional anyway. And then they put us seating or seated at this kind of like island in the middle of the place, and I felt very kind of like, all started going back to the old me, where like I was feeling very vulnerable. And all eyes were on me because we were in the middle, and I just started to get very, irritated and overwhelmed and a bit emotional. And I just couldn't get out of that mindset all evening. Like, I mean, it obviously takes a lot of work for someone who's been living with binge eating disorder to kind of develop a healthy relationship with food. I mean, obviously everyone's different. Would you find that with people would kind of have a relapse every now and again, would it?
Yeah, definitely. And the relapses are just so common. I cannot stress that enough, how relapses are just part of the condition. Even if you're doing really well, you haven't binged in like a few months or even years, and then a binge just happen, it can really floor people and think that they're back to square one, but you're never back to square one. I like to think of recovery from binge eating as not a destination, but it's a place that you've been before and it's a place that you're coming back to. So with every relapse that you have, every moment like that, it's just one isolated incident, and you've been in a place of recovery before, and you can get there again. So I like to think of episodes of binge eating, like relapses, as really good opportunities to learn and to just get curious about what was going on. And like maybe if we were to talk about what happened to you in a bit more detail, we could chat about how, like, you're really in pain with your back, and maybe you'd already eaten, and you just like weren't in the mood for food, and now the food is introduced into the agenda that really just kind of aggravated you. And I think when you develop that curiosity mindset, instead of being very judgmental about what happened, just being curious, learning from it, and then maybe the next time that person invites you out somewhere, or somebody else invites you out somewhere for wine, you can think about what happened the last time and maybe get into a better headspace again.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. So like, if that happens to someone, like, I know you've just kind of given some examples, but what would you say to them? Say, for example, you're in, like, so you sit down, things have happened that you're not expecting, your mind starts to kind of become a bit negative. Like, what would you say I should have done in that, you know? So should I have like focused on the person more than the food? Like, what advice would you give to someone who's in that situation? Because obviously this is probably going to happen to me again. I'm sure this happens to so many people out there listening as well.
So can I ask, what did you do?
What did I do? So like, I ordered the food. Well, first of all, I kind of questioned. I was like, oh, are we having food? And like, yeah, obviously it was a mix up in communication. And so I ordered food. I tried to just get on with it, but I just started to kind of get my mood just dropped straight away. And I kind of became a bit irritable. Now I tried to just be present and just, you know, engage with conversation, but they knew straight away I wasn't right. I didn't want to say anything because maybe it's a bit of the stigma as well. And I felt pressure then as well to not ruin the night or to really enjoy the food. But the food isn't really the reason why I would go. The reason why I would go would be to spend time with that person. I'm not there for the food. And my mind just started to go all to all these places. But when I was aware that my mood had dropped, and I was aware that I wasn't being, I kind of got, the other person said I kind of went a bit quiet and a bit into myself, and they could just tell. But I don't really know what I did. I don't think I did it really well. But I mean, what should I have done, really?
Yeah. Well, again, this is learning, right? And us just chatting about it now is you learning about it. And next time it happens, I think you will be able to deal with it a little bit better. From what it sounds like, if the opposite had happened, if you had have been expecting to be going out for a meal, and then you arrived at the restaurant and your friend was like, oh no, I've just eaten, like, we're just getting wine, maybe the same thing would have happened. I think that would have been a pretty normal reaction, where you would have been like kind of pissed off, like, oh, I really wanted to eat and now I can't, and now I feel annoyed about that. In either situation, you have to remember that, like, you are your own autonomous person. And could it have been an option for you to say to your friend, you know what, I've just eaten, I'm not hungry, so you fire ahead, I'm just going to have a glass of wine.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, is that, like, I mean, once the food came, you know, I think if I had been prepared for food, I would have eaten fine, and I did eat it, but I just wasn't in the headspace once. I wasn't prepared, and then I felt a bit pressure. And then we did have a conversation afterwards, and then, so they gave me some scenarios, say, and this is not for me, this is for anyone, say you're invited to someone's house, and there's going to be people there. I started to think, okay, well, I'm not going there. The purpose of me going to this event or this social gathering is to meet the people, and food just happens to be there. The focus isn't on the food. The focus is on the, you know, and so I find I'm not too bad with that. But if I go out somewhere and I feel the focus is on the food, so you got brought to a restaurant and it's, you know, oh, well, let's try this and let's have that, and I feel pressure then to think I have to really enjoy this food. But my head isn't in the place where I have a good relationship with food. It's not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you do with that? I know there's so much in there. It's hard to really kind of define what exactly you could do.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, that like, you go to these social occasions to meet with the people, and the food is like secondary. It's something that you're going there for. The thing is, though, like, you are going to be going to social events where food is going to be there, and you are going to come up against this again. So sure, like, you can just focus on the person and like let the food be a secondary thing. But I think making peace with the fact that it is okay for you to say, I don't want the food, or I'm not going to order like a main. I might just get like a starter or something just to like nibble on while we're chatting. It sounds like your frustration may have been because like you were not prepared. It was almost like you used the term pressure. It's like that this situation was being forced on you a little bit. So it might be useful to take your power back and, you know, recognize that, okay, this person is getting food. It doesn't necessarily mean that I have to. I can just get my wine, enjoy the conversation, and that's okay.
What advice would you give to the partner or the person that's maybe having to maybe try and support someone who's going to be feeling like that when they go out somewhere?
So the person who you were meeting, say from their point of view.
Say they ask, well, what could they do to help, or what could they do to support someone who's feeling like that?
Sure. Well, I think from the very onset, it should be made clear when you're making the plans, are you going to be eating or not? Like, how would you have felt if it was a meeting that was going to be centered around food? Like, are you in a place where you can enjoy a meal now or not?
I think it depends. It depends on what's going on for me in life in general. Like, things just do seem to get a bit overwhelming, and I'm sure other people are the same. I'm in the position to enjoy a meal. I think it depends, like I said, if the focus is going to be on the food. So in other words, if I get there, I'll try and maybe focus on the person, and someone else suggested to me maybe be more use my senses more. You can tell me if this is right or wrong. So use your senses more. So in other words, smell the food. Why am I there? The purpose, like, just, instead of just trying to get out of my head and try and then I'll try and replace. See, for me, and so many other people, because people have kind of said to me, like, my relationship with food and sitting down with meals has been negative. So that kind of triggers me then thinking, is this, I'm just not comfortable doing it. But I do want to, and I'm sure so many people else, they do want to have a good relationship, and they do want to enjoy the meal, and they do want to go out for meals and replace the negative memories with positive memories,
So from the perspective of the other person, the situation, then I think absolutely nailing it down from the beginning when you're making the plans, is food going to be a part of it? If so, you're the person with the sordid relationship with food. Would you like to go to a particular restaurant? Would you like to meet at a particular time? Do you want to see the menu beforehand? All of those are very appropriate things to have agreed from the beginning. And I think, and maybe, I don't know, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I think that most of that work is done in the preparation. If it's well prepared and it's agreed and you know that what you're going into, I think you would be in a much better position to enjoy that experience.
I kind of, that's pretty much what I had said, is like, if I'm just more aware beforehand, and I can kind of just get in the mindset, kind of just to take the pressure off things. And I think even to have it like an out then, say, because if you feel pressure that if you're going with someone else and you're feeling pressure that if you bring this up, they might get irritated. They're like, well, you might feel you're ruining their night. So I think even exactly if you kind of have a plan beforehand, and like, luckily I'm with someone who I could have a conversation with them afterwards, and we did kind of come up with a plan. But that is not always going to work like that. You might find someone who isn't that open to it, and so it can be quite difficult. But yeah, I think really having a plan beforehand re really helps me. And I know we're not even talking about binge eating here. We're just talking about your relationship with food here. Do you know what I mean? It's not even binge eating. This is just for anyone who's in that situation.
But this is very common, people who struggle with binge eating or any eating disorder. Situations like this are can happen every single day, so I'm glad that we're talking about it.
Yeah, me too. Like we talk about the binge eating, for example. So like, if what it, so say for example, for me, I didn't know I was even had binge eating disorder. So like, what things that you would look out for someone who is doing this? And you might not be aware, but there are, like, obviously there are traits and characteristics that you might be able to look out for.
What I described about being in that trance-like state when it's happening. I think most people who binge will know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that, that it is like an out-of-body experience, like your mind shuts off and your hands are just reaching out, grabbing the food, shoveling it in, and it's only afterwards when the food is gone or when you feel so full that you kind of feel a bit sick or very sick that you kind of come back to yourself and you see the wrappers, you see the evidence, you see what's happened. If that's happening to you, that's a sign to maybe, look more into to binge eating disorder or binge eating itself as a phenomenon. The thing, so I described how like we don't fit into diagnostic criteria, we don't fit into neat little boxes. There is this line between binge eating disorder and other eating disorders like bulimia. Bulimia, people who struggle with bulimia also binge, just the way I described, being in a trance, eating a lot of food, but then there's a compensatory behavior that happens afterwards. So that most commonly, well, maybe not most commonly, but certainly most commonly known is like making yourself sick, or taking laxatives. Those are two that, when you hear of bulimia, that's probably where your mind goes. But bulimia doesn't necessarily mean those two. It can mean planning to go on a really restrictive diet afterwards, after a binge happens, thinking like, okay, I've just eaten thousands and thousands of calories now. Tomorrow I need to burn that off in the gym. I'm going to go to the gym at 6 a.m. and I'm going to exercise until those calories are burned off. If you're having those kind of thoughts where you find that when, after you've eaten a lot of food, that you're saying to yourself, I need to now go and burn this off. I need to go and make up for this. I need to compensate for this in some way. Also indicative of an eating disorder. And yes, technically that fits under the bulimia nervosa term, but honestly, like let's just not even go there. It is certainly a eating disorder. It's under the eating disorder umbrella or spectrum.
So if you're binge eating, but if you're wanting to purge the food back up afterwards, it could be more siding towards bulimia. Is that what I'm getting that right?
Yeah, you're getting that right. So the thing is with binge eating disorder is that technically people with binge eating disorder don't restrict afterwards. They don't compensate afterwards. A binge happens and you just like are able to go back to eating normally straight away or pretty soon after. The thing with bulimia is that there is an element of compensatory behavior there, and it's not always making yourself sick. It can be fasting or over-exercising. And I can see like even right now you're like, but hang on, where is the line here? Because say someone who doesn't have any kind of eating disorder could have a big meal and then say, oh, I need to go to the gym tomorrow because I've had a big meal. Like, is that bulimia? I don't think so. I don't want to over-pathologize it, but I just want to make it known that having to compensate, believing that you have to compensate after having a large portion of food is a disordered eating behavior. So if you're asking me what signs to look out for, if that's the way your mind is going, like that is a sign of something going on.
Yeah, there is a fine line with so much of it, isn't it? And I think it's probably when it starts to turn, when it's repetitive, I suppose, is when you start to have a problem with it, isn't it? I mean, like even the body dysmorphia, people ask me, well, what's the difference between someone that's being a bit self-conscious and someone's living with body dysmorphia? And I tell them, well, it's, there, if you're feeling a bit self-conscious, like there's a healthy balance between feeling a little bit self-conscious and every now and again to letting it control your life. And I think, and the control is probably an important word to use there, because it's with the food as well. When you're finding that's controlling your life, I think that's when you start to have a problem. Because I think for me anyway, the food was something I felt I could control, because you feel like there's so many other things in your life that you can't control. So it's either the restriction or the binging, you're finding yourself being able to control the food. But I presume that's kind of probably quite common, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's what's the term? It's like it's a mirage, right? Like you feel like it is control, but actually like you think you have control, but you don't. And it's that like trying to grasp on, it's the illusion, that's what I meant to say, not mirage, illusion of control. You're trying to like grasp onto some element of control. So you'll like plan out how many calories am I going to eat today, and I'm going to set it all out nicely on a in a journal, or I'm going to put it into my fitness pal, and this is me getting control back of my life after a binge. But it is just a semblance of control. It's not actual control because we know what happens, that a binge happens pretty soon down the line when you set yourself up to eat in a particular way, you find yourself in that trance-like state again and wondering, why am I, do I keep messing this up?
Yeah, it's almost like an endless spiral, isn't it? Which is where I got the name from. But and like I suppose, and so many people as well who have disordered eating kind of characteristics or whatever you want to call it. I think the food, and obviously you correct me if I'm wrong or right, but I think the food is usually a byproduct of trauma or something else that has happened that maybe you're not dealing with, and the food is maybe a byproduct of that. Would that be fair, or am I I'm probably generalizing it a bit too much, but you know what I mean though, like it's in there somewhere.
No, absolutely, you're right. Especially with binge eating disorder, there is a really high level of other mental health conditions in people with BED. Like usually there's a diagnosis of depression or anxiety or something else going on with BED. My role, so I'm a dietitian working with people with binge eating, and I also will find that, yes, absolutely, like that there can be like some element of trauma or those other mental health conditions like I described, but the people who I tend to work with may have some element of that, but instead it's what I see mostly is that their lives have just been taken over with so much noise about what I should be eating, how I should be living, like should I be vegan, should I be keto, should I be like trying to lose like weight every single day of the week, should I, like all of these shoulds that have come from this like wider culture where it's okay to always be changing how you're eating and like starting new diets. And people are just absolutely plagued by all of these different messages and they literally don't know how to eat anymore. That's really where my role comes in. Usually my clients will also be working with like a therapist, or have done therapy in the past. But oftentimes people will say like, yeah, I've done therapy for my like depression or anxiety or whatever else is going on. But what was so frustrating is we just didn't talk about food, and my therapist just wasn't able to talk with me about the actual day-to-day foods. That's where working with a dietitian is really, really useful, is that we really do talk about food, and the day-to-day, like what it's like to eat as someone with an eating disorder, because even outside of the binges, you still do need to eat as well.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think that I probably fall into that category where I'd done therapy for a long time, but because I wasn't really even aware of even the terms, I wasn't talking to my therapist about them, because I think a lot of people, and it's probably the same, you don't really relate your food to your mental health. You know, you kind of, well, I did. You kind of think of it kind of separately. You know, like for me, like the diet was attached to how I look, but my mental health was how I was feeling, and I wasn't tying the two of them together, which obviously is what therapy helped me to do. Okay, so we've talked about kind of what you can look out for, but what if, so you wake up in the morning and you're, for me, like a perform, I'm sure a lot of people are like this, and you feel very overwhelmed, even the thoughts of, when you're in a negative headspace, what time you're gonna eat at, how much you're gonna eat, what are you gonna eat, where you're gonna eat, people are gonna be like, all the type of stuff. What would you say to someone who is trying to manage? Now I know this happened, you know, you've got lots of sessions with you, I know this can't be answered, and you know, do this and do that, but what kind of advice would you give to someone who is feeling a bit overwhelmed, especially what you just said with all the different messages that they get, and they just want to try and manage their day at the moment?
It's a really, really good question. I actually haven't been asked a question like that in a long time, like on a real, like honest, like write down on the ground, like how do I wake up in the morning and like manage this thing? Something that I really promote in my practice is what I call like my prescription for your binge eating, where I will help that person to look at their day. I'll ask them, where does food tend to fit in? Because you do need to eat. You know, I know that you wish that you could just give up food entirely because it's so chaotic and it's taken over your life, but sadly you can't. You do still need to eat. Where is food fitting in right now? Like, are you waking up and having a breakfast, or are you delaying eating until like lunchtime or mid-afternoon or even until the evening? Could we put in some semblance of regular eating in there so that you're not just waking up in the morning and just seeing how the day goes, and I'll just eat when I feel hungry and stop when I feel full, because that is bound to end in disaster. That's when you'll feel even more overwhelmed because you'll be hungry on top of it. So we will work on this prescription where I will like work with them, and every person's day looks different, but we will like put together like the times that you are going to eat, roughly what you're going to eat, like in a really flexible way, what you'll eat. We can talk about how much as well if that's something that you struggle with too. But we need to put that prescription in place, because you can't overcome binge eating by not eating for the whole day and then having a massive binge and like wondering, well, how do I stop this in the moment? Well, if you're coming at it from a place of being physiologically starved because you haven't eaten all day, you're not going to be able to regulate a binge in the moment. Let's put that prescription in place.
And sometimes when you're in the deep depths of things, it is just one day at a time. Like, you obviously do need to talk to someone. You do need to talk to an expert like yourself who can explain food better to you and give you the benefit. Health together is so important as well, because it's something that I just didn't get for a long, long time. I know you're not a fan of ca calorie counting and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, and it's all the mixed messages that are out there, but so many people are focused on that, aren't they? And it's just not healthy.
No, it's not at all. It's taking the decisions from eating away from you. Like, it's no longer you deciding what to eat, how much to eat, when to stop. You're putting that in the hands of your MyFitnessPal app. So yeah, if you're feeling like really tied to your app, like feeling like you can't get through a day without logging, without tracking, that's an indicative of a disordered eating behavior for sure. And don't feel bad about not being able to let go of it. Like, that's a sign that you do need to work with someone like me or like a therapist who can help you to detangle yourself from that relationship. Because look, it's not working. You're listening to a podcast about binge eating, even though you're logging and tracking everything, you're still binging at the end of the day, and it's only making you feel worse about yourself.
I don't even own a scales. I don't have that app. It was really speaking to you and Neve and before I just the calorie count, and even Neve, she used to give out to me if I even call it exercise. Like, it's movement, Keith, it's movement, it's not exercise. But even training your mind to kind of use different language and stuff is just, it's all just about part of kind of building a healthier relationship with food and with yourself, really, isn't it?
Food and body, and recognizing that most people, I would say, have some level of disordered relationship with food. We're a product of the culture that we live in, where fad diets are recommended to us all the time. I'm starting to see that, like, it is a lot more than diet culture. I'm not saying like, oh, let's blame the culture entirely. It is more than that. But like, how can we thrive when there's so many mixed messages given to us every single day? Remember, I worked with somebody, I know that he won't mind me saying this, actually, it was a guy as well, who followed over 4,000 Instagram accounts all relating to food and nutrition. And think about 4,000 accounts all giving you messages about how you should eat, basically, in a nutshell, and the confusion that gives to your mind. It's completely putting your power into the hands of other people and taking it away from yourself.
And you're just going to make yourself feel even more overwhelmed than you were when you started
Oh,
the process. Where do you even
absolutely.
start with that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, he tried to unfollow everybody and start from scratch, but actually it was too much work to even unfollow 4,000 accounts, so he just ended up starting a new Instagram account. My recommendation to that is, yeah, like, look at what you're consuming every day. Say on social media, unfollow the majority and maybe put your trust into a couple of people who actually know what they're talking about. Like, registered dietitians are really well credentialed, really well qualified. You can trust a registered dietitian, certainly one that specializes in eating disorders, or anybody else that you just feel like they get you resonate with them. But keeping it to just a few, because you are just going to be wrecking your head when you're following way too many.
Yeah, but I always say that to people as well. They're like, oh, we're like social media is bombarding me, and I'm like, oh, filter it out, unfollow people, new people. That's your social media. I know, like, you still the algorithm will still give you stuff, and that's nothing you can do with that. But you know, if you want to feel like you're taking control back of some things, take control back of what you're seeing. Like, just filter it all out. I mean, that's what I did a long, long ago. I never really looked that much anyway, but if I'm going to be seeing stuff, I want it to be beneficial to me, or at least I want my don't want it to be bringing my mood down, because it's hard enough to be trying to figure all this out as it is without someone else confusing you even more, you know?
Yeah. It's the thing is, though, it is really sneaky. It's hard to see it sometimes. Like give you a great example. Like, I love listening to, do you know the podcast, The Diary of a CEO? Yeah, with Stephen Bartlett. And he's had like some really good guests on that I really love listening to those in-depth conversations. But then I noticed that every second guest was someone talking about food, nutrition, how to live longer, longevity, like all of these like really damaging messages, actually, because they're not experts. They're people who are selling a product generally. And actually, his podcast is sponsored by Huel. It's his product, the diet product. Like, so now I've completely binged that, and I encourage other people to do the same. But then there's like the likes of Tim Spector, who's a really well credentialed professor in King's College London. Like, it looks like he has all the accolades. Like, he's someone you can trust. He's the founder of the Zoe diet, where you put like that blood glucose monitor on your arm, and it reads your blood sugars, and you adjust your diet based on that. It's a complete fad, not something that you need to go down the road of. So, you know, to anybody listening to this who's like questioning, like, can I follow this person? Is this person good for me? Like, feel free to message me on Instagram at binge.eating.dietitian. I'll let you know if I think they're sound or not.
Yeah, perfect. the last time we spoke, we talked about Operation Transformation. We don't have to talk about it again, but I know at the time you're one of the founders of the online petition to get it cancelled. Are you still involved with that, or have you? I presume you haven't changed your mind on it, but are you still involved in that? Is it still on the go, or what's happening with that?
Absolutely. Not even, you know what, let's talk about it. So yeah, I am still involved in the campaign to have Operation Transformation decommissioned.
Okay.
Hasn't happened yet. It's still on our screen, sadly, but there has been lots of wins along the way. So a year ago, public funding was pulled from it. So it used to receive a quarter of a million euros in funding from the health service every year. That's been pulled. They say it wasn't anything to do with our campaign, but you know, maybe it was even a little. So that's happened. There's no longer the participant weight checks, where they put people in like Lycra gym gear and check their weight in a really publicly shaming way. So that's positive. But ultimately, as a founding member of the campaign, and you know, somebody who just can see how damaging the show is, like to the likes of children, when this has been broadcast into the home, or they're learning about it in school. So, yep, still campaigning for it to go. We're hoping that it will get there. We really hope that it will. I think people are waking up to this, that it's no longer okay to have a entertainment show that centers on a fad diet where people lose weight for 8 weeks and then most likely regain it all straight after. So
It's not sustainable. It just
no.
isn't, you know. If anyone's wondering, if you're listening to this outside of Ireland, Operation Transformation is a it's a TV show on Irish television, which is which y'all just explained what it is. I think they say they've kind of revamped it a little bit. It's more of a health and wellness show now. I don't watch it. I haven't got a clue. But you're saying it's obviously not that at all, or at least that's what they try and cover it as.
Exactly. That's what, like, what I was saying about like the sneakiness of diets, how they sneak in. It absolutely is still a diet show, but they've like reclaimed that it's all about wellness and health now. So yeah, it's on every year. It's been on our screen for 17 years. This is 17 seasons since 2008.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah, so it was first presented by Gerry Ryan, which if you're in Ireland, you'll remember him. It was his show for a couple of years before he sadly passed away in 2010, and received public funding most of that time. Literally, that's money from your budget. Like, that's your taxes that's paying for that. And completely unsustainable. If it was sustainable, they would go back and bring old participants from 2008, 2009 back and revisit them now and show how their lives have changed since being on the show. That hasn't happened. They haven't done that revisit because these people are not maintaining the weight that they lost.
That's a great point, actually, about seeing people from past, because I don't watch it, so I've no idea, but like, yeah, that's actually a great point. Wow. Right, so we're nearly out of time because I know this episode kind of has got a lot of information in it, and it can be a lot to digest if you want to use that word, but we're nearly there. So before we go, I wanted to talk to you about, because last time we talked about obviously just health risks to this as well. It's not just a psychological thing where there's health risks to this. But before I mention that, I just wrote this down because I've forgotten this. If you kind of are having disordered eating or binge eating, it can also be part of another diagnosis, can't it, as well? Not always that, but I mean, I wrote down as some PTSD or ADHD or a mood disorder and stuff like that. It can be part of that as well, isn't it, Joe? Which is all more reason to talk to a professional who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah. As I said, binge eating usually comes with another mental health condition. So, yeah, absolutely. It can be a part of a bigger picture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So obviously, if you're talking to a mental health professional, you can mention them. Right. So there's health risks to this as well. And I know we talked in depth about this before, and I want to revisit that because obviously that's quite important as well. So do you want to kind of give people a bit of an insight into exactly what they are?
So, do you mean the health risks of binge eating? A binge eating
Yeah, like so
disorder.
before yeah, so before I think you mentioned like obviously high cholesterol, heart condition, all those type of things.
Yeah, so there are like some physical, don't want to say the word consequences, but it's just the word that's come to mind, like consequences of binge eating disorder. And sure, they are important, like cholesterol, blood pressure, diabetes, maybe. But your mental health is important as well. So I don't want you to feel even worse about yourself now because you think this is a condition, like I'm binging, I should be able to get a control on it, and I can't. So now I feel so, and now I'm causing that these other things, and now I feel even worse about myself and feel even less empowered to take control of the condition or take steps to recover from the condition. It's not as simple as your binge eating causes X, Y, and Z. I don't want you to think that it is that simple. There's other things going on as well, like people who struggle with binge eating also maybe don't spend much time outside, or they don't have a good social group, or they're lonelier than others, and all of those things can lead to high cholesterol and diabetes and high blood pressure as well. So I don't want you to blame yourself for thinking that you caused like your physical conditions that may be associated with binge eating. If you are worried about that, and maybe you do have one of these conditions, say like diabetes is one that I see frequently. Let's look at how you can improve your diabetes, improve your health overall, but without having to jeopardize your binge eating recovery. So let's not think about going down the weight loss road right now. Like that's not what you need. You're probably going to make your binge eating worse if you do that. Let's focus on a holistic approach, adding something in that could help with your diabetes, but diabetes management. And will maybe help with your binge eating too, like say the likes of movement. If you don't get outside that much, maybe you could aim to get outside for 5 minutes a day, just starting off really small. Or if you're finding that you're eating no, like for want of a better term, like real food, like food outside your binges, any like proper meals, any kind of meat or fish or eggs or fruit or veg, dairy. If you're eating none of those foods, maybe we could start to add some of those in as well as keeping the binges. We're not trying to change the binges head on, but let's add in the extra foods now. All of those things can have a really profound impact, but without putting you down the weight loss road or without you thinking that, well, I should be able to get control of my binge eating. That's going to help my other conditions. We can deal with it a bit more holistically than that.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Brilliant. So we're nearly done. Is there anything else that we obviously I could talk to you about this for hours and hours, Joe. I easily could, and probably so many questions I haven't got through. But is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think is quite important to mention?
If this is really hitting home with you and everything that I'm saying is ticking all the boxes and you're really worried for yourself now, again, please know that this is a really, really common disorder. Binge eating disorder is the most common eating disorder. We don't know exactly how common because it's so secretive. It's so it flies under the radar usually. If you did feel able to chat with your GP about it, even just to mention that you're not feeling good about food lately, I think having that open conversation can really get the wheels in motion. Even just saying it out loud can have a really positive impact on you. So that would be the thing I would say. Like, if this is all ticking all the boxes, please do think about speaking to your GP about it.
Yeah, and if you have a child or a family member, a loved one that you're feeling that they're not having a great relationship or they might be binging, what would you suggest to them?
If it's a child, I would say, let's look at you and your behaviors, and I want you to be a really good leader for them. And sure, like, I'm not absolutely not putting like the onus on the parents to fix the child. You know, it's not as simple as that. And as I said, as a parent myself, like, I don't want you to feel like, oh, now I have this big task of fixing myself so my child would be okay. But they learn a lot from you. So if you can even put a few things in motion that's going to help your relationship with food, like deleting MyFitnessPal, like getting the weighing scales out of the house, those could have a most profound impact on your child as well.
Yeah, exactly. I did those two things, is exactly that.
Perfect.
Right. Where can people, obviously you mentioned your Instagram, but you want to mention again your website and all that type of stuff, because obviously I think you're amazing what you do, so I want to make sure people find you.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, my Instagram is at binge.eating.dietitian. Follow me there. Website is bingeeatingdietitian.com. And yeah, come say hi, you know, send me an email, reach out on Instagram. I'm half in at the moment in terms of like I show up a lot of the time on my social media. I'm just really busy right now doing my doctorate. You know, if you don't see much new content from me, I also have a podcast, Binge Eating Dietitian podcast. I haven't done a new episode in a while, but there's lots of old episodes for you to revisit there. Just because, you know, I'm busy unpacking binge eating from a whole other lens now. So
I'm busy unpacking my life. Your
yeah.
podcast, I completely forgot to mention your
Yeah.
podcast. You have like over 250K listens or something on that. It's
Yeah.
absolutely extraordinary. It's well done. It's amazing. And you
Thank
know what
you.
I love about your podcast is you keep them short as well.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you like 20 minutes or something like
Yeah.
that? It's
Yeah,
brilliant.
usually 20 minutes, and it's for the most part it's just me sitting down giving you advice. I have a few guest episodes, but not many. So actually, I must get you on next time. I'm having
Do.
doing the new
Do.
season. Yeah,
Yeah.
and I think that you will really enjoy it. So yeah, please do check out Binge Eating Dietitian podcast. Start with the first five episodes. They're good way to get you started, and then flick through the titles and see what resonates with you, and go from there afterwards.
Right, guys, I think that's probably enough. Thanks so much, Joe, for coming on the podcast.
Yeah.
Again, that's brilliant. Maybe in 2 years' time, we get you back on again.
Yeah,
I'm
that would
only
be great.
joking.
Let's do
Yeah,
it.
exactly. Right, guys, we'll get out here, and there'll be another episode of the Endless Barrel podcast out soon. See you later, guys. Bye. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, you're very welcome.